Blog Talk Radio.
Another reality show. I am your host, Golden Hawk, and that's a sound elixir, my friends. I can't even tell you how stoked I am to have the privilege to be able to promote those sounds, those alchemical equations. That song, everybody, as we were listening to it, is dissolving illusion and disease from our bodies. I mean, we are really at a point in time in consciousness that listening to music can heal us. That just stokes me beyond chocolate. I almost said sex, but it's not. I'm not there yet. Anyways, we're going to have a great show tonight. We're going to play sound elixirs. We're going to talk to one of my favorite guest in the whole wide world, Mr. Chuck Gallagher. In fact, let's just get him on the show. Welcome to the show, Chuck.
Hey, it's great to be here, Goldie. It is great to be here.
Ditto, baby. It's always good to have you on the air and sharing your wonderful insights and speaking so honestly about your life and letting people know that, you know, mistakes have purpose. And truly, you can't even call them mistakes. Once you get the purpose out of them, it becomes just a divine experience. And you really do exquisitely epitomize that whole concept.
Well, listen, the sound elixir was awesome. And I've got to tell you something because it was a little bit surreal.
Okay.
I'm driving in the car right now. And as I was driving, and the sound elixir really was starting to take root, you know, you had the drums kind of in the background, and I was like, wow, this is just a superb vibe. And the weirdest thing kind of happened. It was like one of those illusionary dichotomies. On the left side of the road, you have these little 8-10-year-old kids playing football at night.
Okay.
You know, all this youthful, vibrant energy taking place. And on the very opposite side of the road was a cemetery.
Oh, wow.
And it just was like, how totally cool. We're listening to this music that can stir the soul and literally seeing left to right the complete circle of life.
Outstanding.
I was just like, wow, that was kind of fun.
Chuck, I love you, babe. You rock. I'm telling you, there are 18 of these elixirs. When you listen to them like an album, I mean, they really do put you in altered states. And,
mm-hmm.
It's exquisite. It is truly exquisite. And the best part of all is she's selling these individually or collectively for 99 cents a piece.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's just, you know, for the cost of a regular album, you know, $18, you get the 18 elixirs. And like I said, it is the only type of its, like there is no alchemy songs anywhere else on the planet right now. And that's not to say that it won't start happening, because I believe, like everything, when somebody starts bringing this into consciousness, there will be other people that will start alchemizing as well. But right now, these sound elixirs can only be found through spiritualjourneys.com, which you can also just go to my page, anotherrealityshow.com, to get to Angel Sound Healing, which is the page. I know, I'm all over the place. I want to stick with Chuck, though. So now Chuck has a request that he's going to joyfully find himself a landline, and I don't know what your time frame is on this. So do you want
Why don't we do this? You had said the last time we talked, and I understand this. It makes perfect sense to those people that are listening. Some people may have heard some of the discussion that we had on one of the past two shows, and there may be some who haven't. So
right.
Before I switch lines, why don't I maybe share a little bit about what you're alluding to so that, you know, it makes a little sense to folks.
That could not be more perfect.
And the way I'm going to do it this go-round is I'm going to talk about an experience that I had last night.
Oh, perfect.
Last night I was in St. Petersburg, Florida. And a financial group had asked me to come speak. For those that are on the show, I do speaking a lot around the country. And I talk about something that really sounds rather boring, business ethics. But the reality is that is only a cloak for a much deeper, more profound truth that just happens to be cloaked in something that people can understand, grasp, and select to listen to. But there's always greater depth. But last night, at this presentation, as you can imagine, if you're speaking before a group of people, someone introduces you, so they say something nice about you. Most of the time, by the way, you write what they say about you, so you get to say something nice about yourself.
Right.
And so they're saying, you know, something nice about Chuck, and then they say, oh, so please welcome Chuck Gallagher, and there'll be the perfunctory little clap. And I come walking into the room, because they don't really know who I am, in an orange jumpsuit and handcuffs.
Oh, is that how you did it this time?
I did.
Outstanding. Okay.
And when I walked into the room in an orange jumpsuit and handcuffs, mm-hmm. It is fascinating to watch the reaction from the people in the room. Some people will gasp. Some people begin to laugh and snigger. Other people are like, start talking out loud. What's this? What's this all about? Some people are like, I'm just confused. But I walked to the front of the room, stood there, until the room was silent. And the words came out of my mouth were, every choice has a consequence.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, on October 2nd, 1995, I took 23 steps. And those were physical steps. I opened the door of the car, and I began walking. And as I walked, I counted my footsteps. And I thought about my wife. I thought about my two children, Rob and Alex, who were young at the time. I thought about my career. I thought about the home that I lived in. I thought about everything that defined who I was. In the community, in fact, that I came from, I was Chuck Gallagher. I was what most people would call a somebody. But as I took those 23 steps, on the 23rd, I extended my hand, opened the door, and stepped into federal prison. On the 24th step, I became 11-642-058.
Love, you're a little muffled. I want them to hear this. I just want to make sure you come across clearly, because your story always has impact when they understand what you're saying.
Okay. Well, and Goldie, the muffled may be the location that I'm in and part of the reason that I'm going to get on a landline.
Okay.
So why don't we do this so that there is some value to this. Give me maybe 3 minutes, if you will.
Of course.
I'm going to switch phones, and we will not be muffled for the rest of the night. How's that?
You rock my world, Mr. Chuck Gallagher. And what we're going to do, of course, because we have, you know, this wonderful time of a few minutes, we're going to play another sound elixir.
All right. Well, you go for that, and I will be back on the line in just a few minutes.
Outstanding, my friend. Thank you.
Thank
okay.
You.
You're welcome. Okay. Now, Trish is really very good at these sound elixirs and which one we should play. So, Trish, what do you recommend? Hello, or should I just pick one?
Snow geese.
Snow geese. All right, let me find snow geese. Now, oh, okay, there you go. Okay, enjoy these elixirs, everyone. I'm telling you, they're healing, they're exquisite, and this will give Chuck time to get to the landline so that we can hear him clearly and the show will be perfect. So right now we have snow geese.
Thank you.
not over. That was Snow Geese. Wow. I am just loving these sound elixirs. I literally just sit on the air and smile. It's like, yes, we can do dead air because I'll just keep smiling my way through the show. But no, no, no. We have Chuck Gallagher with us, and you're back on the air, correct, Chuck?
I am, yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Oh, and you sound scrumptious as usual, my friend, nice and clear. With your great stories and your great energy, and this is the way I like you to be heard. So awesome!
Well, bless your heart.
Yeah,
Hey, wow, this is like deja vu. I'm sitting there and I'm catching the sound elixir the second time, and I'm like, man, I am blessed tonight. Good golly, that's wonderful.
You're right. Indeed, I'm telling you though, there really is some things in the air. Because I mean, and I know the 22nd was the equinox and all of that is wonderful and beautiful, and I know it has a part to do with it, but there really is something. Tonight, I am just I'm just feeling an essence that is extremely expanded. And and often when I go into these spaces, a tremendous healing takes place that, you know, it just happens.
Right.
So, you know, I'm grateful because of the nature of your speaking and what you speak of. I love the idea that, you know, people can heal from, you know, maybe the trauma or the guilt that, you know, the choices they made at one point of their life can catapult them into, you know, truly in, you know, places they never dreamed of being. It doesn't have to hold you down. It can actually be the energy, you know, that kind of throws you into a whole new experience.
Right. Absolutely. That's true.
Yeah.
That is an absolutely true true statement.
Well, you're living proof of it, which is nothing's more powerful than those that walk the talk. You know, no pontificators allowed on another reality show, mind you. We will have none of that. If you haven't walked the dark night of the soul, don't bother showing up.
Well, and unfortunately, or fortunately, depending upon perhaps the perspective, many of us do get that privilege of walking the dark night of the soul.
Right.
And yet emerging on the other side, in most cases, if we're willing to allow it, will make us stronger.
Indeed, 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 and indeed. Okay, so can you talk about second chances? Let's plug the book, and
sure,
we can go right into it because the topics are so exquisitely, you know, designed for deep conversation. So
yeah, absolutely, it's kind of funny. I say funny, not necessarily in a laughing manner, but When I went to federal prison, that was clearly a low point in my life. I won't say it was the darkest night of the soul. That was experienced before the outcome. Prison was the outcome.
Okay.
But while I was there, the question that popped into my head was, what are you going to do while you're there?
Right.
Now, let me just be real candid. As a prisoner, you got to work. My job was cleaning toilets and urinals and things like that, so I became real good at bathroom work. In fact, I clean the bathrooms in the house today. I'm so good at that. a skill I didn't expect to have, but nonetheless, while I was there, I began writing because I felt like that if I were willing to take the time, since I had time, and just write about the experiences that were taking place, perhaps at some point there would be value from that. And literally in 2006, all of those writings I pulled out and began pulling together because I received the message that it was now time to speak and write and to talk about the experience. And so I have to be candid and say I really labored over what the title of the book would be. And I had probably four or five titles. And when I had one, I thought, man, that's it, that's it. And eventually it came to someone suggesting that in my life I am living a second chance. Mm-hmm. And they made a statement to me that really resonated, and that was the statement of, while I routinely and regularly will talk about the choices that led me to federal prison and the choices that led me from federal prison, the reality is many of us have prisons of our own. They are not always bars or razor wire or prisons as we might think of them, but we can be imprisoned by a number of choices that we make in life, and most people will either become victims or victors of the choices that they make. And the question comes down to, once you have made the choice, how do you get a second chance? How can you rise above or beyond those choices that you made? How do you become something more than, in my case, a convicted felon? And it took 10 years following prison for me to, as you say, walk the talk before I felt like I was competent, qualified, or perhaps even humble enough to put into words how one can do that. And so it manifests itself in the book called Second Chances, Transforming Adversity into Opportunity. The book is in the final stages. Thank goodness that is such a long process. But in the final stages for publication, it can be purchased in advance of publication from my website at the what I call the Barnes & Noble price. That means, let me clarify that, Barnes & Noble pays about half of what the book price is. So if the book costs $20, Barnes & Noble buys it for $10. That's okay. How they make money.
Right.
So, you know, I'm a reasonable person. I figure if somebody is willing to, in advance of physically seeing and reading it, is willing to take a chance that it is something that can be worthwhile and perhaps transform adversity they might face into opportunity, then they can buy it at the Barnes & Noble price.
Right.
But my purpose for being on your show is not to promote, oh, go out and buy my book. Of course, I'm happy when people do that. But more importantly, it's not to me about the money. It's about people being able to become empowered and make choices that put themselves into a better state of consciousness and to really transform their lives into something that they can become instead of sometimes feeling confined by what they have been.
Oh, outstanding. I love your energy, Chuck. Like I said, I really honor you've been there. You talked about it. I mean, you continue to talk about it, but you really talk about it from a space of self-empowerment. And, you know, there are people I meet just along the way that you can see how, like you were saying, prison comes in many shapes and forms. I know people that live in prisons, and they're literally million-dollar homes that are the prison.
Right.
You know, there's Gucci all over their prison, but their prison is still just the whole idea that they're supposed to be something, and I watch them struggling to continue to keep that up. Like, their world is collapsing, and they're petrified that their identity is collapsing as well, which, of course, it is on some level, but that's that can be a liberating experience, not necessarily the death that they think it's going to be.
You know, that really is true. Most of the time, many times, the thing that becomes at the moment the darkest night and the thing we fear the most can be the thing that truly liberates us to understand that we aren't defined by those things.
Right.
Last night, I'm speaking to a group of financial professionals. Now, you know, obviously they're dealing with money. I dealt with money. Well and not so well, and the not so well took me to federal prison. But the reality is, one of the comments that came up is, success is not measured, truly, true success is not measured by the home, the car, the watch, the clothes, the 62-inch plasma TV or whatever the newest thing is that happens to be out there.
Right.
It really is not measured by those things.
It's
and in
really
fact,
not.
Yeah, I asked him a question. It was kind of fun because, you know, you sit there and you see him, and it's kind of like there's this glazed overlook. Like, is he making fun of my Mercedes? No, I'm not doing that at all. You know, dude, if you can afford a Mercedes, and, you know, I'm cool with that. I got no problem with that.
Yeah.
It's not the thing. But I asked him this question. I said, let's talk about success. Who was Miss America 2005? And they looked at me like, I don't know. I said, okay, well, let's see. Who won the Masters in 1998? And the guys were like, I don't know. Okay, well, let's see. Who were the Super Bowl champs in 2003? Then one guy hollered out something, and another one said, no, that's not right. And I said, who was it? He said, I don't know. And I just pull those things completely out of the air because, in reality, whomever won, you know, whoever, the team that won the Super Bowl or the person that was Miss America or the person that won the Masters, at that moment, we would all say they have been successful. They have achieved something in life that is unique, that they're the only person at that moment that achieved that. Would we say they're successful? Well, yeah, on a one level, we certainly would. But then I ask this question. What teacher in your life made the most impact on you, and how? And all of a sudden, you could start seeing people's eyes light up. And it was different from different places. But everybody in that room could instantly call the name of a teacher that had a profound impact in their life. Interestingly enough, the definition in one sense of success at the human level is the impact that we have on other people's lives. And you can remember those people.
Yeah.
You can call them by name. The people that get the limelight and the glory and the money and all of the stuff, you don't remember who they were. We've forgotten them, but you'll never forget the person that had a positive impact on your life. So in one sense of the word, the question then starts to become, all right, from whatever experiences we've had, how can we as people have a positive impact on other people's lives? So that in their life, if someone ever said, who had an impact in your life? Name three. If they said, you know, there was this lady by the name of Golden Hawk who one day saw me on the street when I was at my lowest, and she reached over and said something to me that was profound. Now, I don't know if that happened. I'm making the example up. But you know what? That's the kind of thing you might forget, but they will never forget, which means you've been successful.
Oh, that's hot. And you know what? It's success that is what I call the eternal success.
Right.
This is success that when you pass on in the physical, which, and you know, these are, I talk about this on other shows. We don't necessarily dive into that now, but when we pass on in the physical and we recognize that we're not dead, our body just goes away. I really believe in what they do. When you have the review of your life, those are the moments you see, whether you be delivering those moments or receiving that inspiration. you don't necessarily see, and I'm not saying that you won't see yourself, you know, receiving a $5,000 bonus from your job. You'll see that, but you really, you know, it's like the bank account will really be measured by how much did I inspire and or love and or praise, you know, praise, love, and gratitude. Those are what I call the three ascension attitudes. How much did I give in those areas? How much did I receive? Because in that account, it will take you into the soul experience,
right?
Which is also a non-physical experience,
right?
So
that's very true.
Yeah, and you're rocking it because Chuck, this is actually you're speaking the ninth step, which is being somebody isn't defined by our outer material trappings, rather being somebody is defined by using our talents and gifts in a constructive, helpful, and productive way. So,
well, that was quite amazing since I don't have those steps.
I know
in front
you
of
don't.
Me.
And that is literally where we left off was number, meaning I went back on the show, I listened to, we went up to eight. This is the one we're supposed to start at.
Wow. Okay. Well, obviously it must be meant to be that we just kind of pick up where we left off.
Well, it's a very holographic experience, my life, and this is, yes, indeed. So, I think you did that exquisitely. So, can you share something that either you have inspired or have been the recipient of inspiration?
Well, there are a lot of things, Goldie, that have taken place. The challenge becomes, how do I put this, getting out of our own ego.
Mm.
You know, I say this, and I'm certainly open to, as people listen to you and they, you know, text you or whatever it happens to be that they do, it's an interesting conversation because one of the real challenges is that idea of, well, you know, how have you inspired someone? And the answer to that question is I'm not sure I really know, but if I think I know how I did it, the question is, did I really inspire someone, or was it I got to thinking so much about what I was doing that I became enamored with it, thinking I'm inspiring when in fact maybe the motive wasn't pure.
I get that because I thought about that after I just said that. It's like, how could I tell a story where I've inspired when I could only tell a story where I've been inspired? I really don't know when an aha moment has come because of something I've said, because I won't feel that in another. They would feel it. I really don't know.
Right. So let me do this. Let me tell you two stories, okay?
I love
both of which
stories.
Are true.
Tell us stories, yes.
Okay? Both of which are true, and both of which happened without necessarily intent, okay?
Okay.
So there's this I'm listening to the radio one day. I'm driving down the road in Dallas, Texas. And I'm listening to the local traffic and weather on the 8s with KRLD 1080. I'm not plugging a station. I just listen to them.
It's all good.
And they come on with the person of the week. Okay. And in this case, it happened to be a seventh grader, a little boy who was a seventh grader who performed the Heimlich maneuver on another kid and saved the kid's life.
Nice.
And the radio DJ was like, you know, interviewing the kid and interviewing the mom, and the mom was, oh, my son, I'm so happy. I can't believe he did. I mean, you know, it was just gushing, and it was getting kind of nauseous and so forth. But what happened was the kid goes to school one day. They're at break. They're sitting there eating like little oranges or tangelos or whatever it happens to be, and one kid gets choked on an orange slice.
Okay.
Now, if you've ever been choked, you know you're not able to breathe. So you can't say, hey, y'all, I'm choked. Can you help me here? You're just like going, ah, gasping for breath.
Well, I believe the universal sign for choking is you put your hands to your neck and you, that,
right.
You know, you, yeah,
yep.
That it's like a people then know I'm choking.
Right. So the kid does that.
Right.
But all the other kids are like, dude, that's cool. And they gather around him and watch the kid choke. I mean, you know, kids are just kind of freaky like that.
Oh,
whatever.
My.
And so the kid that won this, you know, this award, he just runs up to him and does the Heimlich maneuver. And the orange slice goes, pew, shooting out of his mouth and, you know, across the cafeteria. So they're interviewing this kid on the radio. And they said to the kid, how did you learn to do the Heimlich maneuver? And the kid's like, well, the movies. And the DJ is like, he didn't know what to say. He says, what do you mean, the movies? He said, I saw it in the movies. He said, what movie? He said, Ms. Doubtfire.
Oh, there you go.
Now, the reason I tell that story is that kid did not wake up that morning thinking, I am going to save somebody's life. I am going to inspire. I am going to be a hero. I will be on the radio. You don't, when you inspire, you don't typically sit there and intend it.
Right.
It happens because you do something that is unintentional but has a profound effect.
Right.
Now, in my case, my dark night of the soul was the night that, or day, that I got a call that clearly to me outlined or exposed the fact that I was a liar and a thief. And I knew, and however you want to define higher consciousness, God consciousness, universal consciousness, but something a whole lot more powerful than I, and I knew in consciousness that I had not borrowed money or invested money for a client. I had stolen it.
Right.
And I knew that night that my life was going to change, and I considered suicide. I have to say I am a chicken when it comes to pain.
I am too.
Oh, man, I can, you know, anything painful, I ain't up for that now. Especially if it's like needles, you know, like getting a shot.
Definitely.
Or
definitely.
Ooh, ooh.
My tattoos are out. I can't do tattoos.
Yeah. See, girl, I am so weak.
I mean,
they may be cute, but not on this body.
Exactly.
Ooh, no. But I started calling that night to talk to psychiatrists, psychologists, proctologists. I didn't care what it was, but I needed to talk to somebody. And most of the time when I called, because this is like 7 or 8 o'clock at night, I got the, you know, our office hours are open from 8:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. You know, you've reached us after office hours, but if you leave your name and number and a brief message, we'll be happy to give you a call and have a nice day. Well, if you're thinking about killing yourself, somebody telling you to have a nice day just ticks you off.
Or that it's closed. I mean, aren't they 24/7?
Well, you'd think.
Hot lunch.
But I got this guy on the 7th call.
Huh.
And I, you know, somebody answered, and I was kind of freaked because, I mean, there was a human being on the other end of the phone instead of an answering machine. Mm-hmm. And I said, man, I need to talk to somebody, to which he said, I was just walking out the door. I thought you were my wife calling. I am running late to have dinner with her. Our office is closed, but if you leave your name and your number, and before he could get out number, I said, I think about killing myself. And then he said, let's talk. Now, Goldie, I don't know, number one, I don't know who he was. I mean, it could have been the janitor. I don't know.
Yeah.
He didn't tell me. Number two, I don't know how long we talked. It could have been 2 minutes, 20 minutes, 2 hours. I don't have a clue.
Okay.
But he said something to me. This is what he said. He said, son, you have made a terrible mistake. But you are not a mistake. The choices that you make tonight will define your life in the future and set the foundation for the legacy you leave to your two sons. Make those choices wisely. Now, I don't remember anything else about what took place, but I hear those words in my head coming out of his mouth as clear today as he spoke them 19 years ago.
Yeah.
He inspired me. But he didn't wake up that morning and kiss his wife goodbye and pick up his briefcase to go to the office and say, I am going to save a life today. I know there's someone thinking about offing themselves, and I'm going to be their baby.
Gotcha.
You can't intend inspiration. Inspiration will come when it is truly given without any expectation of outcome.
Right. Right. But I do believe that, you know, as we go through our own fears and our own trials and our own tribulations, it's almost like, it's like our frequency gets stronger, and there is this attraction that the universe, the cosmos, the planets, you know, the species, they tend to know that there is a space to go to. You know, I clearly from the radio show have, at least in my belief, touched more lives than I could have only talking to people in my living room.
Right.
But what I tell anybody who's getting ready to start to do a show or contemplating doing radio or talking of any kind is, don't be afraid to speak your truth of the journey you're on. You know, I was
right.
Like, I said, I believe that I get the people listening to my show and having experiences and you know, that they email me or they become friends with me or whatever, because I'm willing to show, you know, that, hey, listen, you know, I'm knee deep in it too. I am not outside of this trouble we call life because I do a radio show. I'm just open to talking about it because for me that my gift is to talk about it. Whether it's good, it's bad, it's ugly, it's beautiful.
Right.
Like, you know, that the gift is I'm open to sharing it, and I believe actually that is one, that's number 10 with you about not running away from it.
Well, it's empowering when people find themselves caught up in victimhood. Often what they're doing is looking at the past, circumstances, experiences, what have you, and staying stuck there.
Right.
And the thing that I found, and this has come up on multiple occasions, it honestly comes up at least once a week.
Right.
But people will ask this question and say, well, you know, do you ever think that there is going to be the possibility that someone is going to look upon you in an ill manner or not allow you to do something or whatever because you're a convicted felon?
Right.
And, you know, no. Actually, I don't feel that way at all. But the reason is because I am very open about it. I don't mind. It is a part of my life. Being a convicted felon to me is the equivalent, except for the needle part, but it's the equivalent of having a tattoo on my butt.
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, it's there.
Right.
I can't take it off.
Right.
You know, at some point in time, I might have been dumb enough to turn my happy butt up in the air and have somebody shoot needles in it. Now, that's about the dumbest thing I can think of, but, you know, I try to make it as entertaining as possible. But, you know, if I'm sitting there, actually, the way my body looks now, you know, if I had one of those tight little balls or something, you know, like tattooed on my butt today, it would be all dimpled and stuff and probably look more like a golf ball.
Okay.
But that's riding and eating too many Twinkies. Anyway, the reality of it is I can't change the fact that it's there, but it doesn't define who I am.
Right. Well,
so,
I mean, if anything, it's become, you know, this is your springboard to motivational speaking. Your claim to fame is the numbers you now, you know, when you walk into your motivational speeches in dressed in orange, you know, it literally becomes like the character that helps you define. People listen to you because that used to be an actual identity for you.
That's absolutely correct. And when you try to hide the truth, you expend so much energy trying to hide it that you are not freed from it or you're not empowered by it. I don't hide from it. You're right. That was an identity that truly was mine. I have chosen to create a different identity, and what people are attracted to is the transformation. How is it that you can go from a low to a high and not be defined by the low? And
yeah.
The answer, in one sense, is I don't hide behind the low that was there.
Exactly.
You all too often, you hear about people that have experienced something, and it may not be positive. It may be kind of gnarly, for example. But then it's like, well, that's just part of my past. I'm just going to sweep it under the rug. We'll put it back in the closet. We're just not going to talk about it again. Excuse me, why?
Right.
Why? I don't get that. You know, because someone
will break it up. Well, there's a fear that it defines
them.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
No. That's
bad radio show hosting.
No, but you know, hey, but that's true. Now, I'm not trying to be funny in saying this, but there's an element to me of truth in this. It's like if you're a politician. Now, I'm not a politician and don't necessarily intend to become one, but the reality of it is, if you air all your dirty laundry to begin with, man, talking about disempowering the media that wants to fish,
yeah,
there's nothing to fish for.
Yeah.
You know, I did this, and this. Now, I'm going to put it out. I'm going to just out myself. Now, there's nothing to out, so now we can talk about something that is worthwhile instead of you spending all your time trying to figure out what am I keeping a secret. If there are no secrets, you're free.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I feel that people that have secrets don't know the inner journey yet as the journey to like, the soul and the truth. In other words, as long as there are people, clearly, I mean, masses and masses of people that still validate themselves through what other people think of them.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's like a major part of, you know, because people say to me all the time, you know, Goldie, you're pretty open about your life. And I'm like, I am, because the truth is, If someone doesn't like the fact of my history, and God knows it's colorful, that they don't write my checks, they don't come to my parties,
right.
They don't bring me flowers anymore.
Oh, man,
sorry,
do I not want to break into some Neil Diamond?
I was thinking Barbara Streisand. Anyways.
Okay, well, you can be Barbara, I'll be Neil. Man, we have got a duo going on now.
Well, I mean, but the truth of the matter is, because I tell people all the time, being spiritual and coming out with spiritual concepts is very similar to being gay and coming out with sexual concepts that might not be embraced completely by mass consciousness.
Right.
Because here's the bottom line. A judge or a judgment is a judgment, whether it's a sexual judgment or whether it's a God preference. A judgment is a judgment, and, you know, people clearly think I am just off my rocker. I mean, off my rocker. And I finally reached a point in my own philosophy where I went, okay, that's cool. You don't. I don't need you to support me for me to be on this journey.
Right.
It's a really powerful space to be in, and I believe that's why, you know, like you, you don't need to be validated by anybody.
Right.
That's big.
Well,
don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I
or not anymore.
There's a side of me that's like, well, yeah, I guess that is big, but you know, it's just a place of being, a space of being. I not regularly, but enough that it's becoming somewhat commonplace. We'll get calls from people who either are going to jail or have been to jail, and the ones that have been. It's very interesting when they come out, because the one thing they're wanting to figure out is, you know, how do I put my life back together? You know,
right.
Is it going to be easy? What do I do? You know, they want the magic bullet. And the answer to them is, well, first, be brutally honest with everybody about what you've done and where you've been.
Right.
Oh, well, if I do that, you know, I might not get a job, or I might not, or whatever. And I'm like, and they said, but how did you get a job? I said, well, I just told you, but apparently you're not willing to listen. Let me repeat it. Be brutally honest with people about who you are and where you've been.
Right.
So if I went into a job interview, you know, we're going to play nice for 5 minutes, just kind of play and get to know you. That's reasonable as human beings. And when they start the interview, most of the time I will stop them and say, I need to ask you a question, just to be fair to you. Do you have a prohibition in your company from hiring someone that is a convicted felon? Because if you do, we don't need to continue the interview. I respect and honor that within your company.
Right.
And if they say, absolutely, we cannot hire a convicted felon, most of the time they will ask the question,
what did you do, right?
Yeah, what did you do?
Right.
And then there's something that just happened. One, I have been brutally honest. And that honesty and that transparency has allowed for a dialogue to take place that otherwise would not have happened had I maintained an illusion that that's in the past. We don't need to think about it. Let's just move forward.
Right.
And
right.
I kept my mouth shut and didn't ask the question. They will find out eventually that I was a convicted felon, and then they will think I am not an honest person, and they probably would turn around and fire me.
Right. Even if you got the job.
Yeah, even if you got the job.
Right.
So if you don't get the job, what have you lost? Nothing. You didn't have the damn thing to begin with.
Right.
And if you are brutally honest and you, so to speak, out yourself and you become transparent, people then become comfortable talking with you, interacting with you, and saying, you know what, I appreciate the fact that here is someone who is honest enough to say where they are, and that's what we are looking for, and I'm playing the job aspect of it, and there's a pretty good chance you're going to get the job. Does that mean everybody today would hire me? No. Of course not. But I don't care. I don't need to be hired by everybody. I need to be hired by one body.
Well, that's truth. That's truth.
So what difference does it make that there are going to be people that will turn you down? Just put it in a slightly different way. As a female and as a male, I don't need to be married to all females in the world.
Right. Well, because I was going to say, this actually is applicable to relationships as well.
Meaning, oh, absolutely.
Because, you know, there is a gentleman that I'm dating in PA, and he also is right from the bat on his personal profile in a dating site. Said that, you know, listen, I had a DUI, I've been to jail, whatever, I don't have my license, blah, 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 blah. And I'm telling you the amount of responses he got. And, I looked at him and I go, you get that because you're honest. And he goes, well, I don't have shame over it.
Right.
This is who I am. And I think that's a really, that's like this major ingredient about people, you know, it's like, we're not, there are people that believe if you make a mistake, that's it. You're damned to hell forever. There is no recovery.
Right.
You've made a mistake. You have been branded. And if you believe that, well, by golly, hell just showed up. You don't even have to die.
Yeah.
You don't even have to go to purgatory. That is the prison, even once you get out. Even if you've never been caught. Shame and guilt are the prisons that you're not allowed to make a mistake and learn from it. To me, that is just like there's nowhere in nature that says if something happens, nature instantly will rebalance itself. Instantly.
Right.
What makes us think we're separate from nature that we couldn't become rebalanced and now the experience serves? Which
right.
But the people, the shame and the guilt, because like I said, not just jobs and relationships. I trust my friend from Pennsylvania with money, all of it. How could you not trust the guy who just put his whole life out there?
Right.
Which is exactly what you're saying. How could you not trust that?
Right.
So it really becomes the badge of, I mean, in all honesty, the felon becomes more trustworthy than the politician, which for me cracks me up because what I see all happening in the whole, and I know that you write about this a lot on Facebook, the whole economic collapse that is just, you know, we come up, we go down, we come up, we go down.
Yep. Yep.
But the truth of the matter is the banks and the big monies, you know, the Lehman Brothers and the all these big names, they are really, this is my personal opinion, they are turning out to be the criminals. And the criminals who are doing, you know, like what I consider like a petty crime, stealing to put food on your table and, you know, avoiding taxes because, you know, God, you're just trying to make the bills. You know, in other words, I see them manipulate laws with these banking fees for overdrafts. Holy moly, camoli! It's like, are you kidding me that you're going to charge these astronomical fees for people having, you know, maybe some issues at the moment with a banking thing, and you're up at the top with AIG still giving out huge bonuses for the people in the industry? You know, it's like this whole, like I got this prayer that this whole thing is going to be the unveiling of that which is really cancerous, is going to be revealed. And those that, you know, kind of are at the bottom gathering scraps and doing what they can, even if they have a history, like you're saying, just being, you know, kind of having your integrity about it will wipe the slate clean.
Well, you know, there is a saying, you reap what you sow.
Right.
And that is a true statement. And that applies to all aspects of life, whether that is personal, whether it's business, whether it's money, whether it's relationships. Ultimately, you do reap what you sow. And, you know, I really do, I try not to get too judgmental, because there's a multitude of reasons for a lot of things that take place. And, you know, you sit back, and this is true. In fact, you said this kind of toward the beginning. Sometimes the calamities that we face are the things that, in fact, make us stronger.
Right.
Now, we sit back today, and yes, you're right. On Facebook, I try to keep the pot stirred with the folks I'm connected with. I just like people to make comments about stuff. It's fun to think about it. But it's interesting, when you sit back and you look at it, we can get so caught up in the moment of, oh, my gosh, the economic collapse and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, okay, well, let's back up, Jack. If, in fact, the calamity that we face can, in fact, make us stronger, perhaps we should be, and this is really a weird way of putting it, thanking the people that have been willing to get so caught up in the greed and let the collapse take place.
Oh,
because
that's
in reality, we might be able to sit back and have a stronger and a higher consciousness. Why should we, for example, have a financial system that rewards short-term behavior when short-term behavior may not be what is long-term beneficial?
Right. Well, no, Chuck, bravo, man. Let's...
I'm driving down the road tonight. I'm sorry I'm rambling a little bit, but I'm driving
Ramble!
Down the road.
I'm loving it. You're doing great. Keep going.
And I'm listening to John Lennon's song, Imagine.
Great song.
And I'm sitting there. It's a very cool song. You know, it really is. It was a very cool song. And I'm sitting there listening to this, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, I know this is really going to be weird, but there was all the controversy yesterday of Gaddafi and Obama and all these people that were speaking before the UN. But what if, as bizarre as it may sound, what if the United States said, we are the freaking richest country in the world? What if we gave food away? What if we didn't expect money? What if we were willing to just freely give?
Share.
Can you imagine the impact that it would have on people's lives if, instead of operating from a position of mighty power, we operated from the position of, we are so wealthy, we can freely give it away?
We would know our abundance at that point.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you can't know abundance if you're hoarding. Hoarding is not abundant.
But think about, you're younger than I, but think about the generations of people that are now on this planet and the attitude and the mindset. Now, I could be 100% wrong, but I tend to believe that the kids today or the young adults today are probably less motivated by the type of greed that my baby boom generation was motivated by.
I would agree with that from the kids that I know.
Yep.
I don't know if they're, and I'm in, just so you know, Fairfield County, either the richest or the second richest county in the United States. So it's weird because we are clearly not the norm, and yet there's a norm set here.
Right.
So that's one of those paradoxes.
But, you know, you take the kids that you know, and I take the kids that I know, and I'm sitting there thinking, you know, I mean, the ability for those, when I say kids, and I don't mean that disrespectfully, because some
young
people
are like,
it's a goat, okay, give me a break. The children, the youth, or whatever the heck you want to call it.
They kids, yes.
But, you know, you take those kids, they are much more global in thought. They don't have the same racial connotation as maybe that baby boom generation. I can identify with the old movie Wall Street where Gordon Gekko says greed is good, and I don't think that the average kid today would say greed is good, and in fact, I'm not sure they're as motivated by money, although there are some. I won't argue that point.
Right.
I'm not saying that this is a completely altruistic generation, but it is a sweeping group of people who may sit back and look and say, you know what, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. We actually will increase our prosperity by freely giving that prosperity away instead of keeping it to ourselves and trying to be this all-powerful entity which denies others the ability to achieve and receive their good.
I agree. I think that it's in consciousness, even though it might not be taught on mainstream media.
Right.
The children are and I've been a nanny. I mean, the children are definitely more altruistic by nature. I mean, I've seen kids that are like, you know, mom, can we donate all my gifts to the homeless shelter?
Right.
I mean, and I'll literally turn around and go, what did you just say? Like, where did you come up with that? That is brilliant. I mean, like, you know, because I get that, you know, they actually get that they've got a room of 200,000 toys.
Right.
And yet another, you know, large delivery of these things is just not going to make a difference.
Right.
I mean, they know that, and it's like, I swear, I'll look and go, that is just hot.
Yep.
Because it's inherent. I don't, you know, it's like, they're too young. They haven't read it, or they haven't been exposed to it, or if they have, it hasn't necessarily, it's not like I said, hey, what do you think about the idea? You know, I'm the nanny.
Right. Right.
I'm not here to tell you to give your toys away. I mean, if mom asks me suggestions, I will suggest. Most of the ones when I was, they don't. And so when I hear that, I really am like, because it's a confirmation that it is in human consciousness.
Right. Yep.
That's the biggest hope that we can have. The children are going to save us.
Right. Right.
From all sorts of destruction.
Right. Yep.
Which is, you know, I mean, and that's why, I mean, the whole key is to be young at heart. It allows you to become part of the saving. You
right.
become part of that, because when you're that inner child in us, does not work 120 hours to have toys in the driveway.
Right.
The inner child says, you know, boy, let's let some of the money go size down and spend time with my kids, just walking in the woods, or, you know, taking less vacations and more time being with each other, to actually sitting down and, you know, just being with our kids.
Right.
They're such incredible teachers. I mean, incredible teachers. Chuck, I'm going to interrupt this for 1 minute. I just want to play a promo.
Sure.
Take a break. Give everybody, you know, a potty break if they need to go to the bathroom, grab some water, do whatever they need to do. And we're not going to do a sound elixir because we did that when you, you know, when you switch phones. So let's just take a quick break and promote a little of Almeen's books, and we will be right back with Chuck Gallagher and more fascinating talk about, you know, the goodness of Earth. I like talking about the goodness and consciousness. I like that very much, actually. So we'll be right back.
The world of mysticism has yet another reason to rejoice. Almeen has authored another manuscript of profound knowledge. It's entitled Opening the Doors of Heaven, Revelations of the Mysteries of Isis. Through a time travel tunnel linking Ireland and Egypt, Isis has sent a small group of masters to prepare for the day when the mysteries would once again be released to the world to restore balance and enhance life. They established the Order of the White Rose to guard the sacred objects and the secrets of Isis. In an unprecedented event heralding the advent of a time of light, these mysteries are released for the very first time. Packed with truly thought-provoking information, this book is bound to have an indelible impression on not only the reader, but on global New Age philosophy. To reserve your copy of this groundbreaking work, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016.
Yay! That's how Almeen's work, and she is the wonderful composer of the sound elixirs. There's a lot on her site, and if you're willing to go down the rabbit hole, you know, take the red pill, I highly recommend Almeen's stuff. Now, back up to the surface. Even though, I'll tell you, Chuck, you know, you always surprise me because you really do have an understanding of a deeper level of consciousness. You know, most people don't know this, but I met Chuck when he came down to Rhode Island, and initially it was I called him down to help do some sales and some promotion of WARL when I was, you know, working in the radio station in Rhode Island. And after spending 3 days with Chuck, came to the profound understanding that my dream and Greg Norman's dream were really not on the same page, and that it was, you know, really my I don't want to say duty, but my obligation to myself, to my authenticity, to follow my own journey. I mean, it's what brought me to Blog Talk Radio. It's what really got me first flying without a net, because Greg was very much my net, and the people in my inner circle knew that a lot of the things that I wanted were not being created based on that it was, I kept affiliating myself with Greg's dream instead of just being authentic in my own. And you gave that to me, and I'll be forever grateful for that, because it was like my first real big step of going, you know, my dream has purpose. My dream has value because one simple reason, I'm choosing to give my dream purpose and value. I don't need someone outside of me to say that. And in fact, someone outside of me was saying that I was following somebody else's dream. It wasn't even mine. So it was a profound meeting. I mean, we had Chuck scheduled to be in town for 5 days, and by golly, we shipped him back to Raleigh after the fourth day. No, it was we were complete after 3 days. I mean, it was one of the most profound experiences, because I never expected that turn, not at all. And yet it was kind of bubbling up inside of me. You really just helped me to see it.
Well, you know, Goldie, the reality of it is that was just as powerful and beneficial for me as it was for you. The thing that is very interesting for us in the journeys that we're on is oftentimes what appears on the surface isn't where the greatest benefit comes.
Right.
I started off a little earlier in the conversation last hour saying I speak on a very boring topic. At least most people would say it's a boring topic, a business ethics. I mean, you know, you don't expect that to be fun. It's
right.
Probably like, you know, eating split pea soup or something, except for the few people that really get excited about that. It's like, okay, well, it's healthy for you, but it doesn't exactly turn me on.
Right.
But the reality is, I know walking in the door that as long as I am open to spirit moving wherever it needs to go, that people will be able to find something of meaning and value out of what is taking place at that moment, far beyond the surface opinion or appearance of, I'm just there to talk about something to give them credit for hours that they need in order to maintain a license.
Right.
You call me up to, you know, let's talk about sales. And honestly, you were thinking, gosh, I would be able to help you maybe jumpstart some sales, you and Greg. And I was thinking, okay, well, this is cool. I'll come up there and do this because who knows, maybe that means I'll become a sales consultant for radio stations. Yay, we both had an expected outcome.
Right.
The outcome turned out entirely different.
Entirely.
And yet, we all likely walked away feeling much better about the outcome that was unexpected than we would have felt if the outcome we expected had been achieved.
I agree. there was a liberation for me. I mean, I was liberated from, see, and that's what's so interesting about the prisons. Like, see, for me, the prison was believing someone else had to get me to my dream.
Right.
That could, the minute I gave my power to Greg, I couldn't achieve a dream for anyone, let alone myself. I couldn't achieve it for Greg. I couldn't achieve it for me. Because if you give your power away, you've just left the only place where miraculous, you know, transfigurative, transformative things happen.
Well, and, you know, you take what you just said, because that's absolutely true. And if you put it into the perspective of, if, in fact, I am willing to, and let's talk about, you know, you were saying you'd give your power to Greg. What if you give your power to a past experience? If your power is given to a past experience, are you then therefore able, just as if you were giving it to another person, are you able to truly go where you need to be because you have chosen to give your power away?
No.
And when people look and they say, well, you know, how do you get this second chance? How do you transform adversity into opportunity? Well, one is don't give your power away.
Right, right, right. Yeah, that's a big one, because I see people giving their power away to the past, to governments, to doctors, to philosophies that they don't even, you know, in other words, whether it be Christianity or Muslim. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like there's this mass consciousness kind of river flow that, well, if everybody's going there, you know, I must go there too. And it's like, you know, and then you hear your mother in the background going, and everybody jumped off a bridge, would you follow them too? And of course, you know, if it was a really fun bridge with with really warm water at the bottom of it, I just might jump off that bridge. But meaning, you know, people are genuinely, they believe the masses know best. And I should say, I think that's one thing the children clearly understand, is the masses do not necessarily mean that it is the right choice for self.
Right, right.
They seem more empowered or more aware of, I can choose what the masses are doing, or I can choose to be, you know, to walk to a different drum.
Right.
So, indeed, because I think that's a huge piece, is giving your power away.
Right.
A huge piece.
Right.
Hey, I'm going to read the next one.
Kind
of get us back on the, because, you know, I have a feeling we're going to go for probably 4 years.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's get back.
No, and Chuck, everything in life has a divine order.
That's true. That is true.
That is what I call the bigger picture. If you see only let me read a little. Everything in life has a divine order. Often our choices confuse the order. Oh, wow, that's hot. There is a way through every situation. When we release control and allow the spiritual power of life to take hold, all will be restored to order. By making right choices, right action and consequences will follow. That does not mean the road to divine order will be smooth. We may not get what we think we want, but in the end, we will receive what we need. In your case, well, you wrote, in my case, the outcome was better than I imagined. That's deep. Stutter.
Wow, as I hear it, I think, gosh, I wrote that? Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the releasing control is so. See, because when I. The epitome of releasing control is trust.
Goldie, let me share something with you.
Okay.
I'm going back now many, many years, and I'm going back, in fact, to 1991.
Okay.
And in 1991, the federal government had said, Chuck, you know, you've done wrong, and we want you to plead guilty to doing wrong. And I wasn't really excited about that, but I had clearly admitted I had done wrong. I had made restitution to the people that I had stolen money from. And I recognized that, you know, there's a price that you have to pay, and I should step up and pay the price. But But in making restitution, before the federal government ever considered wanting to prosecute me, there was no prosecution, and I had, with the help of friends and family, legitimately borrowed money from the bank to be able to pay people back that I stole money from.
Okay.
Legitimate borrowing to pay back stolen money.
Okay.
And I was going along, and then all of a sudden the federal government comes along and they want to prosecute me, and I'm like, oh, crap, this is a real problem, because if they put me in jail now, I can't earn money to pay the bank back. And if I can't pay the bank back, then there's just another victim. It's like this. It's this incredible circle of just gnarly nastiness. So I asked the government to defer prosecution. Just wait. I'll plead guilty. I'll give you my time. I'll do whatever you need, but let me have the time to pay the bank back. Let me do the right thing. And I was hung up on an outcome. And on a November morning in 1991, now, I guess that's 18 years ago, almost. I got a call from my attorney, and he said, Chuck, the U.S. attorney, this is at 9:30 a.m., the U.S. attorney just got off the telephone with me. He is going to prosecute. You will plead guilty next week, and you will probably be in prison before Christmas.
Ouch.
And I'm like, oh, this sucks. And I drove from Western North Carolina to Eastern North Carolina because I had a job there, and it was not a particularly pleasant ride. And I thought about, I am no longer in control. What I think is the right thing apparently is not going to happen.
Right.
I just have to accept it. And when I released that control, as I said, not a particularly pleasant day, at 4:45 that afternoon, now we're talking the scope of 6 hours.
Right.
At 4:45, my attorney calls me and he says, are you near a fax machine? I said, yes. He said, I'm getting ready to fax you a 14-page legal document that defers your prosecution for 3 years.
Ah.
I said, whoa, back up, Jack. You told me this morning that the U.S. attorney told you in no uncertain terms that I would plead guilty next week and would be in prison before Christmas. How is it that in the short scope of 6 hours, and if you take an hour for lunch, five, somehow they have changed their mind, crafted a 14-page document on legal-size paper that says they're not going to prosecute me for 3 years? And his response was, Chuck, I don't know. I am just as shocked as you.
Wow.
When you release the control, because I tried everything. I mean, I used my best sales techniques to try to get that to happen.
Right.
While I was in control, I was clearly shown I had no control.
Right.
When I released control, the right outcome took place.
Right.
Now, 3 years later, sure enough, I pled guilty and I stood before a judge and I had lived a clean life now. And I thought I would get probation. And when the gavel fell, he gave me an active sentence in federal prison plus probation. And that wasn't a good day either. But it was the best thing that could have ever happened to me.
Right.
I am a stronger person for having experienced the totality of the punishment that I deserved than I would have been had I been able to skate.
Right. Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Do you have the belief, the philosophy, the knowing, however you want to term it, that you are a creator of your experiences?
Oh, yeah. I have the belief that when we come to live in this earth plane, that we have a purpose and a reason for being here. And we are not defined, let's put it this way, the purpose for me being here might have been achieved by multiple paths. I wasn't relegated to a specific path to accomplish my objective, and it is possible that I could fail. perhaps not accomplish it as fully as possible. Some people don't think there is such thing as failure. You know, to me, it's experience.
I agree with that. Yeah.
You know, but the reality is absolutely. I believe that my purpose for being here is to help people, empower people, to provide inspiration or hope, to help perhaps through example, help people understand that they are not defined by their past or their experiences, that they can create the future for themselves that they wish to create, because I have lived the positive and negative side of the choices that we make.
Okay, listen, I'm gonna turn this show a little bit around for a bit.
Go for it.
Yeah, because I don't know. I'm just getting the sense to do this. We're gonna do a little. I'm gonna share with you some stuff that I'm going through. And just as you would do that day in Burger King when we were in Rhode Island.
Okay.
Just work with me for a bit on this.
Okay.
Okay. At present, I am. You know, I have been going deep down the rabbit hole. Now, where I am right now in the rabbit hole is in a space that death is coming. I'm sensing death is my teacher. Now, here's the quandary. And, well, the quandary is, and the reason why I bring it up is because you just said just now, when you gave up control, you know, everything kind of fell into place, and that was the way it was meant to be, that you had the 3 years that you didn't get sentenced, and then 3 years later you got sentenced, but you went to jail because that you needed to go to jail to get the full spectrum of your experience.
Right.
Now, what it's triggering inside of me is that I know that death is my teacher. I'm reaching a place where in order for me to truly, you know, at the risk of sounding crude, suck out the joy of life, I recognize that I'm going to dance with death because the two are inexplicably connected, because if we fear death, it takes away the joy. Now, what my quandary is, I have been literally, like, pondering, how can I experience death, genuine death, without actually getting hit by a car, shot in the back of the head, having a, you know, maybe some sort of space object drop out of the sky and land on me? Like, how, because remember what we said earlier in the show, I don't like physical pain. I have always been under the guise of we have physical pain because we have not dealt with an emotional issue or a mental issue. In other words, those bodies of energy are what create the densest body of energy, which is the physical. If we heal certain beliefs and certain patterns in the emotions and in the mental, it would dissolve the physical that I never have to experience the cancer my mother experienced. I'm working from a level of chakras and energies. Well, I'm at a space now where, you know, I'm pretty confident that, you know, the aches and pains that I have going on in my body are detoxing, believe it or not, for planetary purposes. I mean, in other words, my expansion is getting to the space where I'm now detoxing for human consciousness, not just single Goldie, but actually human consciousness. And I get that death is an illusion because, like I said, I already know the experience. I've died in a dream in the sense of I didn't die. I got shot point blank in a dream twice in my head and recognized I could still hear myself think and speak in my voice and went, oh, well, that's interesting. I got shot in the head, but I'm not dead. And the dream state and the awake state, as you go deep down the rabbit hole, you start recognizing you're actually more real in the dream state than you are when you're awake, and the awake state is really the dream state, and, oh, it's a whole other thing. Where I am also is I recently watched the whole trilogy of The Matrix, mm-hmm. and one of the things I got was in the very first Matrix, when Neo was just starting to come into the idea that he was the one, I realized that in the very first Matrix, he got shot by his counterpart, which was another aspect of him, Mr. Smith, and he died. I mean, the bullets came into him. He died. The being checked his pulse. He was dead. Then he woke up. And when he woke up, he jumped into Mr. Smith, came out, and was able to put his hands up. And when they shot the bullets, this time the bullets came to his field and went no further. And I'm watching this going, okay, the revelation was after he died, he kind of chose, no, I don't die. I'm not going to die. Now, I want to know for myself, I have never in this life had a near-death experience. I've never died, quote-unquote, in this body other than that dream where I got shot, which, of course, I didn't die because in the dream you're already non-physical. So my question to you is how would you work with me like that day, you know, in Burger King, because I don't want to fear death, and I don't want to fear the pain of the recouping of coming back from whether it be an electrocution. I don't know how I would go. That's just where I am. I don't know if that makes any sense.
You know, you out there, girl.
I am.
You really are. Okay, so let's take it a step at a time.
Okay.
Okay? Let's just take it a step at a time.
Okay.
In the first place, you have a sense that relates to death. Now, there's three things that I heard, I think. Two of them were real profound. One was that there is something that is significant to you about death and or its lack of existence. Okay?
Okay.
And so you're talking about it, and you use the Matrix as a really interesting, by the way, example. That whole series of movies was really kind of different. It expands awareness, and
yeah.
It's funny in life how things that can be, quote, entertaining as movies really, in fact, are awareness expanders, and we don't realize the awareness is being expanded.
Yes.
Okay? So the Matrix expands awareness. And in the movie, sure enough, Neo finds out that really nothing is real other than what you choose to make it. So if you want to put your hand up and stop bullets, you can. Now, I'm not sure that I am of a mental consciousness that if somebody shot me, my hand's going to stop the bullet because I'm still too caught up in the matrix, so to speak, of believing of a reality that we exist in. But your experience, your space, very well may be further expanded than that. But I hear on one hand, and it's really an interesting dichotomy to me, that you're talking about. You had this dream experience. You were in this life, in a physical realm, shot, I think you said, twice in the head.
Correct.
And then you found out that you could hear yourself, and that in reality, while you may operatively shed your body, you are not dead.
Right.
Then you're talking about death in a real body sense and saying, I fear pain.
Okay, wait a minute. Can I just add one more thing to this? Because I
sure.
think it's kind of pertinent. Okay. And I knew there would come a time when I'd want to talk about this, and now tonight is the time. About 2 months ago, I liberated a friend of mine from, quote-unquote, an abusive relationship.
Okay.
There was a night that there was a 7-mile high-speed car chase of me and my friend and her boyfriend and about 13 other cars behind us. Now, what was interesting was it was a setup, right? We were trying to raise money to get her a plane ticket to bring her out of the state. So at one point, we were sitting in a school parking lot. It was at night. The 13 cars come in. They essentially, I mean, I knew clearly as I see car after car after car, I went, oh, my God, this is a setup. I mean, like, what am I going to do? Now, the reason why I'm bringing this up now is I literally got it in my head, you drive, Goldie. You drive like you've never drove before, and you don't stop until there are police surrounding you. I mean, that was all I thought, knew, felt, and created. Now, in this seven-mile period, see, thank God, I have a Toyota Echo. Her boyfriend had, I don't know, some kind of Chevy, which was also a four-cylinder. So there was never really a time that he could make or break me, other than there was a mental game going on where he got ahead of us at one point. He stopped the car. Her friend at the time pulled up behind us with like 13 other cars behind us. And it was like the first time that I went, okay, well, you know what? I'm going to drive on the wrong side of the road. I'm not going to stop the car until I'm surrounded by cops. In other words, it's not just, okay, you've sandwiched me in, but look, there's all this room to the left of me. There's the road. I don't care that it's the other side of the road. Chuck, when I was driving on the other side of the road, I looked the next day or 2 days later. There were certain points where I was driving over people's yards because he was trying to, like, literally push us off the side of the road by being in front of us.
Right.
And I saw places that I drove through brick walls, over tree stumps, through things that I know for a fact we were driving on those yards, and yet nothing was happening to the car. I did all of this in second gear. It was a rainy night. At one point, there was a guy coming on the side of the road that I was on, which was the wrong side of the road. And, you know, truly by the grace of God, I don't believe it was the grace of God. I believe it was my creation of I held a vision. And my vision never once said, maybe we'll die. I never said that. I literally was like, I held the vision. I will not stop until the cops are surrounding me. And the other thing that I held was, they will not touch me. I'd be damned. They will lay a hand on me. Because, you know, I grew up in, you know, dark spaces. I've had my butt kicked by multiple people. That was just not going to happen 2 months ago to Golden Hawk. I mean, that just was not going to happen. And when the guy was coming on the right side of the road towards us, I mean, for whatever the reason, the guy behind me just created a space. I came back into the full line. The truck passed on the left. I moved back into the wrong side of the road and then just started flying through red light intersections. I mean, I could tell that they were like, we can't even follow her because she is just one crazy bitch.
Yeah.
Like, they literally were like, they had no idea. Now, the reason why I bring this up is I believe we defied on many occasions that evening the laws of physics. I mean, I did all of this in second gear. It was raining. We did not slip and slide. We were running intersections. We were going through brick walls and tree stumps. I mean, like, I believe that was maybe some degree of a initiation that life is more than you know it. Because my whole thing after that night was, how do I generate that kind of magic without being petrified?
Okay. Now, let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Okay? Because the story that you just told, number one, I don't doubt.
Right.
Okay? I'm talking about as humans, for the most part, in the collective consciousness, accept some things to be truth.
Okay. Yeah.
But that said, we accept stuff today that's perfectly fine, and it makes perfect sense to us. And if you went back 300 years, or 400, or 800, or you know,
right,
whatever,
right,
you could take. I mean, I'm talking about in a time frame that we can even remotely grasp.
Right, right.
You could go and you could talk to people, you know, in 1009 instead of 2009, and you could tell them or show them things today, and they would absolutely think you are a lunatic. In fact, it would be impossible.
Agreed, agreed.
So it is highly possible that we are truly more greatly able to manipulate reality than we will admit or can consciously know.
Okay.
Now, you're saying to me, which is a little different in my head than what we first started with, but let's stick with it. You're basically saying, wow, I had such power of intention, which probably is why you had the ability to manipulate reality as we would define reality today.
Okay.
But I had such power of intention. I was able to tap into, you know, it's, let me rephrase this statement. It is said that we use maybe about 10% of our brain's power.
Yes.
Okay?
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Yes.
So
yes.
What if that is a true statement? What if we use 10%? Some of us may use a little less. But, you know, what if it runs around 10%, but all of a sudden there is something that takes place in life, it becomes so powerful and so profound, the emotional energy that is behind it so energizes or so flows through, you know, the fiber of your being that you're able to kind of, it's like having nitro on one of these little rice racer cars.
Yeah.
You're able to hit that little nitro button and all of a sudden you have this super, ooh, I'm tapping 60% of my brain for this moment in time, and I am able to manipulate reality. I'm able to go through a brick wall or go over a tree stump or whatever.
Or fly above it. Maybe we flew above it.
Or fly above it. But I am able to manipulate reality to accomplish what I want to accomplish because my focus and emotional intensity is so powerful that it supersedes what is normal on a day-to-day basis.
Well
now,
said.
You know, that makes perfect sense. And you'll notice, you hear these stories, and I'm not the one that's certainly going to recant them. Yours is the perfect example for purposes of the show tonight. But, you know, when you hear stories about, oh, my gosh, there was some catastrophic event that took place and a car fell on my son and daddy went out and he just picked the car up.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, okay, wait a minute. No, nobody can do that. You know, Chuck couldn't pick a car up. Well, you know, I don't know that I could or I couldn't, but I know this. I know that if the emotional intent was strong enough that it just bypassed and superseded everything that I know to be normal and real, I do believe that it is possible to do the impossible.
Absolutely. And I know you believe it. It shows up in everything you speak about.
Now, when you talk about death, which is what you started with.
And I want to talk about that, please.
The question that just screams at me is you are aware and conscious that death isn't reality.
Yeah.
If you assume, let me define this just so that, you know, for the audience's sake, we're all kind of, at least I'm clear in what I'm saying. Death being, okay, there's going to be a point in time when I am going to die and my body will be left behind. Okay?
That is my, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And when my body is left behind, it will eventually decay and return to trace elements no different than a freaking leaf that falls off a tree
right. In
October or November and falls to the ground and eventually decays and becomes part of the earth, which sustains the tree that will eventually suck it back up through the tree root and into the whatever the trunk of the tree and eventually put out another leaf. Okay?
Right. Yep.
So that's the body side of it. You believe that there is no death. You've experienced it in a dream, and you are probably aware enough and conscious enough to say there really isn't death. We are just going to transform the canister or the vehicle that perhaps we choose to be housed in. Okay? But you're screaming. I don't mean literally.
Right, well.
But I fear pain.
I know.
Well, it's like, whoa, Jack, back up a second.
Okay.
You fear pain, Now, I don't like pain. I'm going to tell you that on the front end. I don't like needles. I don't like anything that has to do with pain. I can tell you that on the front side, okay?
Yeah.
But, okay, so you don't like pain. But are you saying that you need to be, I don't know, this is a rhetorical question.
No, talk it.
Are you saying that you need to be convinced that there is no pain and therefore you have to experience it in order to know that pain in reality is just another experience that we are creating in a human physical form?
Well, is that, I mean, because that's what the fear of it would create, because, like...
That's correct.
As long as I'm afraid of it, because it, I believe exactly what you just said, that really pain can be transcended. I mean, I read things all the time, whether it's of the Native American traditions where they're hanging by these things on their chest until it rips through their skin as an initiation, or we can go to something maybe a little more pleasant, which is basically... people doing the S&M, you know,
yep.
From a sexual point of view, some people's pain is other people's pleasures, and it becomes this really muddied line of what's painful is also erotic and ecstatic. So, you know, it's like, it's just like what's hot, what's cold. I mean, different people have different temperature settings that and different tolerances. All of it comes down to perception.
Well, and you know, here's a question, and it's, again, not necessarily one that there's an immediate or simple answer to, because those, you and I talking, or the people that are listening, will have different answers to it. But the question sometimes is, do we need to experience it to experience it, or are we experiencing it to learn from it? And in human form, I think we get a little bit of both.
I agree.
I think in some cases we experience things just because we want the freaking experience.
I agree.
We may not learn a whole lot from it. We may enjoy watching the majesty of Niagara Falls. I don't have to go over it to know that the flipping water is going over the edge and it's going down to the ground.
Right.
Now, some folk, I was going to say dumbasses, but I guess I shouldn't, but I did. Anyway, at least it's Blog Talk Radio, so you can bleep me later.
We're safe. No, you're good. You're good.
But, you know, some folk feel like they do need to go over the edge so they can experience the thrill of the drop and all that kind of stuff. And you know what? If they need that, that's fine. The question comes down to, in life, there are some things that we experience because that experience serves to either teach or to reinforce what we are here for. And in other cases, we experience things just to experience them.
Well,
and to me, the question is, you know, in one sense of the word, you have this consciousness that death is not real. Now, do you need to be dead and have a near-death experience to really get it? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't need, because, you know, what I want to do is I want to experience that which takes me off the treadmill of the whole cycle of we die, we have karma, we come back. All of that is, you know, it's the rim. It's the rim of the fishbowl. It's like I'm really desiring deep experiences that, you know, and it's like, you know, deep experiences that take me out of the rim, take me into a new space and time. But, you know, of course, as I ask for these things and I'm being chased down the side of the road, I mean, I can't even tell you, I was so afraid, Chuck. I was so scared. Scared, and not, ironically, not scared of dying. Scared of getting my ass beat by, like, you know, 28 kids.
Uh-huh.
And what's funny is, because, and this is where you're helping me uncover this, because that had been historically in my past. In other words, I have a reference point of 5 people beating me up. That was a reality for me. My fear wasn't of death. My fear was of getting beat up. Okay, see, I didn't know that until just now.
Well, and that fear gave you the power to uncover or discover or experience, whichever way you choose to look at it, the ability to manipulate reality.
Right.
Now, it's funny that you've got this show called Another Reality Show,
right.
And you experienced an alternate reality based upon the power of intention and emotion behind it.
An intense emotion.
Right.
I mean,
intense
it was
emotion,
truly
exactly.
Intense.
Right, right. And I think that really is very profound, because it's easy for people to say, and this is something that is somewhat transformative. You know, if I say, well, I want to transform adversity into opportunity, then, well, how do you do that? Well, you've got to have some pretty intense emotion behind wanting to do it.
I agree.
Know, you can say all day long, well, I want to be rich, or I want to do this, or I want to do the other. But, you know, if you don't feel it, if there is not that desire, if the depth of desire is not strong enough, you will not transform where you are or the reality that you live in.
I agree.
And it's only until the experience becomes, or the circumstance, maybe the circumstance creates the experience, becomes so profound that you will actually make a different choice.
Right. You know, because what's ironic is my friend is now once again back with the guy.
Yep.
And I, at this point, have now surrendered and said, you know, first of all, I mean, there's no more liberating. Goldie does not want to travel that road again. But it became a transformation of another kind, which was what we talked about earlier, which is the release of control that she's 18 years old.
Right.
I mean, she needs to walk a dark path. If that's what she needs to do, then you can't take somebody from a journey that ultimately was that, you know, I mean, God knows I was a major drug addict and drug dealer when I was 18 years old. And in my personal opinion, I turned out pretty good. What's to say that in her dark night of the soul being with, quote unquote, somebody who I believe is an abusive relationship won't create her to be maybe one of the first women presidents on earth?
Yeah. You know, that's
I don't know what it'll make for her, in other words.
Right, absolutely. You know, you and she, that night, you were motivated by not getting your butt whipped.
Yeah.
And the intensity of wanting to be able to help this girl to get out of something that you recognize is not healthy for her.
Yeah.
As we recognize health in a relationship.
Right.
And here's what you learned, at least one of probably many things, but one thing that you have learned as you're sitting here talking tonight is the intensity and the desire behind that emotion and that experience gave you the ability to literally alter what today appears to be reality.
Yeah.
And the other side to it is you, nor I, nor anybody that's listening to the show can completely transform or avoid what we on this earth have chosen as our path. And if we choose to learn the hard way, we will.
Yeah.
One way or the other.
Right, but let's go back to that. So the question, like, which first triggered me, which was when you said you got sentenced. You thought you might get probation after paying back for the 3 years.
Yep.
And instead the sentence was you're going to do jail time. Do you believe we have the choice to determine whether we will learn the hard way or the easy way, for lack of a better word?
Yeah, I think so. I think that we can choose various paths. I mean, I can look back at life, and I can say to myself, it's kind of funny. Again, not ha-ha funny, but just kind of
right.
Funny.
Ironic.
I look at my life, and I know today, at the ripe old age of 52, that a lot of what I am doing today in a different form is what I would have chosen early in life. Now, I could have chosen a different path to get me to the same place.
Right, right.
I didn't. And in fact, I will say that I really turned my back on the path. And by turning my back on the path, the only thing I did was I went down a different road, a different rabbit track, or a different trail through a more dense and deep, dark set of woods that ultimately sent me back exactly to where I need to be today to accomplish what it was that I came here to accomplish.
All right. So in other words, no matter what, we're going to get or not no matter what, but
it
gets us there. Yeah.
Yeah, we can make it easy. We can make it hard. I do not regret the experience that I had. Now, I don't want to go back to federal prison. Let me just kind of be real clear.
Yes.
You know, there was nothing a whole lot fun about that thing.
Yes.
But the reality was, it was an experience that was profound enough that it made such an indelible impression that when I stand up before a group, when I write or stand up before a group and speak, I speak with passion and authority, and they know that it comes from a place deeper than just the initial substance that they are expecting to get.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And you have that ability, and you have that power because you are speaking the experiences and the reality that you have. It is no mistake that you've got a radio show called Another Reality Show, and you just had an alternate reality experience. Now, a lot of people are going to say, BS, you did not go through a brick wall. You know what? You probably did in some form or fashion. You just altered reality. And those people that don't believe reality can be altered will never believe your story
right.
until something happens that is significant enough in their life that they find that they too or someone close enough to them that they implicitly trust has altered reality.
Right. Well, and what's so interesting that you're saying this, because today, right, just today, a friend of mine was coming over. I'm on the phone with my girlfriend. Almina is teaching a class called Immortality and Incorruptibility.
Okay,
so you can see that I'm clearly, you know, it's a three-month course. It is essentially what I'm finding myself right now. I think the best words to put it is I go to mystery schools, which I believe in another lifetime that's what they were called. And mystery schools are simply where you take reality and you start learning it from the perspective outside the laws of physics and outside basic belief systems.
Mm-hmm.
So this gentleman was coming over here, and I'm on the phone with my girlfriend, and I'm talking about how in the class today she talked about that we are one with the infinite being. So everything we look at, everything we touch, everything that comes out of our mouth, in our awareness that we are one with the infinite being, is literally the God-Goddess expressing itself. I am expanding myself to the entire consciousness over the cosmos, all that is, and flowing this experience. Now, what's interesting is, you know, I knew my friend was coming over. I'm talking to my girlfriend, and I'm looking at the plants. I'm looking at the shelf that I built, and I'm having, like, this communion with it. It's a communion that I can't even put into words, because my friend comes over. He's in the house. He rang the bell. He's knocking on the door. He's going, Goldie, Goldie. Chuck, I am not even remotely closely aware that he's here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 20 minutes later, I come out of whatever this is that I was in, and I don't know necessarily that I was in God consciousness, because you would think I would have been aware that he was in the house. And I was really just aware of the plants, my friend, and this feeling of something within me that just felt super good. I mean, I tell you, I don't know how to explain these experiences. I know that was an altered, because I said, oh, my God, I clearly must have been in an altered state, because I don't know why I didn't hear you come. It's like I feel like, you know how the string theory talks about that there's 11 dimensions simultaneously going on with different things happening in each, all based on the same principle of the moment? I don't even know if I'm describing this correctly. But I feel like I was in a space where my friend Dave did not get here. He wasn't in the house, because I didn't hear him. And he was like, you know, I didn't really know what to do. So he just sat out in his car. He smoked a cigarette and then rang the bell again. And by then I was ready to hear it. You know, it was
right.
Like.
Right.
But you know, it's just so, I mean, you're tapping on to things with me, because I'm really trying to have an understanding. Because at one point I got that this show tonight with you, because of what you helped me so clearly define in Rhode Island. And it's not that, I mean, I love talking about you and the 23 steps and all of that. It just, I clearly got bring Chuck into your world right now and see if he can help you or just share in his insights.
Well, Goldie, the thing is, when you are willing to bring people into your world, not only will that may possibly benefit you personally, but you're opening that opportunity for others who have had experiences that they might not be willing to share or articulate to be able to participate in the discussion, if nothing else, from one step removed type thing.
Right.
You know, you're talking about, well, where were you when you know, your friend was at the house? And I ask myself this question. Now, I know there are going to be people that listen to this and shudder. But, you know, when you're driving down the road and I'm sitting there with my little BlackBerry and I'm driving, I've got my eye on the road, I've got my eye on the BlackBerry, I'm reading and deleting emails. Now, most people are going to listen and say that's the dumbest thing they've ever heard.
Right.
You know, that's not safe. You shouldn't do that. People get in accidents all the time. Okay, y'all, I hear it. I can see the little fingers typing now. Boy, this ruined the whole show. But, you know, the question is, what is, and I will say it this way, how many people have been driving down the road and you're at point A and the next thing you know you're at point D and you don't have the first conscious clue of how you got from A to D?
I agree. Exactly. Who, as we've posed this question, friends of mine, who is driving the car?
Right. So, you know, we sit back and we get so caught up at times in believing that we know what reality is. Reality is what we create. You and I created each other and our experience together for a reason. Everyone that we are interacting with, we have created, and we have created that for a reason.
Yeah.
And we may not know exactly what that reason may be at any given point in time. And when the reason has been accomplished, there are some people that are in our lives and they will stay in our lives for the rest of our lives. And there are others, you know, for example, our parents,
mm-hmm.
you know, for the most part, our parents stay in our lives in some form or fashion, of course, until there is, at the human level, death.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you and I may come into each other's lives and we may be here for many years to come, or our paths may pass at some point in time and we are not part of each other's lives.
Mm-hmm.
But you can take to the bank while we are here.
Mm-hmm.
There are no mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And we are here for a reason, as are the people that are listening to the show tonight.
Indeed. I so appreciate your openness, your lack of judgment. And it's not, because it's not even a lack of judgment, to be honest. Chuck, you have a compassion about you that is, you know, is big as, you know, the cosmos. Because, like I said, I don't know what compelled all this. My whole intention was to talk the 23 steps. I jokingly said we might get through two. That is exactly what we did.
Yeah, many the truth is said in jest, and so there you have it. You got it. Not a problem.
I mean, I totally realize that, and when we get to the 23rd step on whatever show that is, I at this point, I can't imagine having another reality show when not having it. It's so, Chuck always being a guest on my show. I love your energy. your storytelling and 90 seconds. Sorry, she just cracks me up. I love when you're on the show. I love that we don't know where it's going to take us.
Of another reality show, and it's always my privilege and pleasure to share time and space with you. I am happy to do that. I hope it's been beneficial to the folks that have listened, and I look forward to coming back and visiting with you soon.
Oh, indeed, indeed. Babe, they're loving you on the chat room. I love you. I find this very beneficial. I mean, I'm pumped up because there's a really good chance that I'm going to drive to Pennsylvania this evening.
Cool.
And I knew that, too, because I was like, I'm going to get off the radio with Chuck, and I'm going to feel just like I felt when we were in Rhode Island for those days together and other radio shows. I'm pumped. I mean, I'm just pumped up. Your energy is exquisite. I love that you share all of your wisdom. And we will definitely have Chuck back on the show. I will speak to you. Actually, because I'm going to drive to Pennsylvania, I probably won't schedule you tonight, but I will be in touch with you.
Not a problem.
we will get you back on the air. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you, Trish, for running the chat room. Thank you, everybody, Kimmy and Jimmy and everybody that was here, all my guests. I don't know who you are. Thank you for listening in. This is another reality show. You've been listening to Chuck Gallagher. You can get his book at chuckgallagher.com for the introductory rate of whatever Barnes & Noble charges.
$10.
$10. I'll tell you, I have the book. The book is outstanding. Buy the book and inspire yourself that you're not your choices. You're not your bad choice. You're not your mistakes. You're consciously what you choose in the moment to be. And that can change in every moment. I love you guys. Thank you so much for being here. I love you, Chuck. I will speak with you soon. Everybody have an amazing night.